nanohub.org.
You can follow along with this presentation using printed slides from the NanoHub. Visit www.nanohub.org and download the PDF file containing the slides for this presentation. Print them out and turn each page when you hear the following sound. Enjoy the show.
All right, thank you. Again, my name is Xianfan Xu, professor in mechanical engineering. Most of my research actually has more to do with the EE instead of ME, and you will see that. The topic of my talk today, nanoscale optical antenna. Okay, so what are antennas? Everybody have some idea about the antenna on your cell phone, on your radio, television. For example, this is the indoor television antenna, and we have outdoor television TV antennas, and there are more exotic type, shape antennas, and all you probably have seen those very giant antennas for telecommunication between, you know, across far distance or into the space. So what the function of these antennas, right? Maybe we should ask the questions. Let's say the antenna is basically a device to collect radiation, to receive radiation, and optimize the received signal and pass the signal to a load, right? So we say collect radiation in an optimal condition, meaning that you design the size, geometry, angle, and so on and so forth, and deliver to a load. And of course, typically we talk about antenna and are these antennas in radio frequencies, microwave frequencies. And we talk about these wavelengths of these microwaves of the order of millimeter to centimeters. So now, how do we make this connection to the nano world? Right? So everything is about nano nowadays. So what is the nano world antenna? So if we shrink the size of antenna to nanometer size, then we are talking about the frequency in the optical frequency, visible lights, right? So the visible light frequency anyway from 400 nanometer to 700 nanometers, right? So then we will have to face the challenge in miniaturization. You need to shrink the size. Everything had to be made very small, right? And also we need to handle optical properties instead of properties of ideal conductor or ideal metal. And we will talk about that in a minute, right? And also we may end up or run into the new physical new types of physics. So before we go forward, let's say, why do we need a nano antenna or nano optical antenna? Okay, so the motivation is that we need to, or we in many uses, that we need to produce a nanoscale radiation source. We need a light spot that is as small as possible. For example, for imaging, okay, for data storage. Okay, or for manufacturing. Okay, so we need a radiation source with high concentration. Okay, and we know that if we want to produce a nanometer sized radiation source, the intensity of light can be a problem. So what we have here, let's say the simplest idea of producing a nanometer light spot. Okay, the simplest idea, let's say I have a metal screen, and I shine a light on it. Let's say this metal screen, I dig a hole in this metal screen, and this hole size, any size, 10 nanometers, 100 nanometers, as small as you want. And you want to squeeze light into this or through this hole, and of course it won't work well. And if the wavelength of the light is much bigger than the dimension of this hole. So, and for this hole, we call sub-wavelength hole with its dimension A much less than the incoming wavelengths, okay? And what happened is that if the light managed to pass through this hole, it will diverge very quickly, and there's a so-called near-field region where the light is sort of maintained a spot size of nanometer size, but it will diverge very quickly. If you take a far field measurement means that you use normal detectors, lenses, CCDs, and so on and so forth. You put it here, and you measure the intensity of the light going through this hole. What you'll find out is that the transmission efficiency we define this transmission efficiency as the total transmitted power here divided by the incoming radiation intensity times this area, okay, incident power over the size of the hole, okay? And this transmission efficiency is very weak, which is of the order of the ratio between the size of the hole over the wavelength to the fourth power, okay? So you can see that if I keep the light, if I keep reducing the size of the hole, then the transmission efficiency is extremely weak and becomes not useful. And this kind of formula is developed by Beth, the Nobel laureate, in maybe more than 60 years ago. So the people know that you can do this, but the consequence is that you don't have high enough transmission efficiency or transmissivity. Okay, so this type of transmission in the hole, of course, can be calculated. Of course, nowadays the work done by Beth was use a the magnetic dipole model to calculate the transmitted field. And here, of course, nowadays with computing powers that we all have, we can carry out finite difference type of calculation. You can simulate the full field of the EM wave going through this small hole, and you can solve the whole Maxwell's equation, right? If you do that in the numerical way, that you can calculate the transmitted power through a small hole. Okay, here is comparison. Okay, sorry. So let's say we have a hole which this size, the light with 500 nanometer wavelengths shining on it, and we want to calculate the transmitted power. And this problem actually is simple enough. You can derive analytical solutions. Okay, this particular problem, you have a circular hole. You can find an analytical solution by you can calculate this is the E field in one plane, and that's the E field in the other plane, and this plane, X plane, is the polarization direction. Okay, the light is polarized along the X direction. So you can calculate the transmitted field distribution, and you can find out that these three lines, okay, the top line, the middle line, and the bottom line are the intensity of the electric field at different distances from the surface here, from the bottom surface of the hole. So you see the decay of this radiation is very fast. We're talking about from 10 nanometer here, 50 nanometer, and 100 nanometer. After 100 nanometer, you don't have a lot of light. Okay, so this is FDTD calculation. Basically, you can calculate this problem and the the calculation, the numerical calculation results are very close to the analytical solutions. So now, this the low transmission doesn't mean that it's not useful. Actually, the idea of producing a hole on a metal film has been used to develop a instrument so-called NSOM, near field scanning optical microscopy. And this is the a typical NSOM probe. So what this is that this is from a company called Nanonix. This probe is made of glass or a glass fiber. You take a glass fiber, you heat the glass fiber, and pull the glass fiber. So you will form a tapered tip. You heat and pull it. So the tip of the fiber gets thinner and thinner. Eventually, it breaks. When it breaks, it forms a very, very tiny diameter at a tip. And then you coat this fiber with some kind of metal, and you try to pass the light through. And this is used in the NSOM system. And you can pass the light through, and you can do the imaging or the excitation at a scale of maybe 50 to 100 nanometers. Okay. So, of course, the transmission efficiency of such a fiber is even lower than what we had previously as a flat screen with a hole. So the reason is, of course, the wavelength cutoff or the wave cutoff effect. When the light propagates through a tapered structure and at a certain distance from the end of the probe, you have the wavelengths much, much bigger than the size, the diameter of the fiber, then the light cannot propagate anymore, or only the evanescent wave start to can be emerged from the tip. And you can calculate this type of transmission, which will give you roughly the d over lambda to the sixth power. So the transmission of the taper structure is even lower than a flat structure, so even worse. Okay. So now, of course, as I said previously, that is a lot of use if you can find a way to enhance transmission through a very small hole, right? So not too long ago, there's a paper talking about using an array of holes instead of a single hole. In this case, in this work, there's a silver film here, and you produce many holes, okay, arrays of holes. The hole diameter in this case, in that paper, is 150 nanometers, okay, and the periodicity, or the distance between holes, is 900 nanometers, and the film thickness is about 200 nanometers. So what they have found out is that if you use an array of holes, then the transmission can be much higher, and the transmission much higher. And also you will see the oscillation of transmission with respect to the wavelengths. At some wavelengths, you see these peaks. The transmission can be on the order of one, meaning that the transmission is much, much higher than predicted by Beth theory. Okay, and we will talk about this in a minute, about what is behind this high transmission. In another work that people produce a structure so-called a bullseye structure. Okay, you have a hole in the middle, then you have those rings surrounding this hole. And what is interesting here is that the dimension of the hole itself is not very small, let's say 250 nanometers. Okay, but what have been seen here is that the emitted light is highly collimated. It's highly collimated. It's going through forward, not like the evanescence wave or the wave emerging from a single hole that we talked about previously, diverges quickly. But in this case, the radiation actually is sort of collimated, and the spread of the angle is very small. This is the angle, and this is the intensity. So most of light is concentrated in the cone, right? And also, it has some kind of resonant kind of shape with respect to the wavelengths. When the wavelength changes, you see the peak. At other wavelengths, the radiation is very weak. So the common explanation, okay, there are many, many different theories behind this enhancement effect. The common explanation of this field enhancement is that you have excited something called surface plasma polariton. Okay, maybe some of you have heard about this, but for those of you who haven't, I will give a very quick description of that. So this SPP, or surface plasma polariton, basically is a coherent fluctuation of electrons along the metal dielectric interface. Let's say we have a metal surface. This is the metal, and on top of the metal, let's say we have air or vacuum, doesn't matter. So the light shining on this interface or the surface, and actually, in order for the surface plasma polariton to generate, we need a p-polarized light, or TM wave, meaning that if the light shining on the surface had an angle, there is a component of electric field perpendicular to the surface, right? This is, if you have a TM wave, you will have a perpendicular component. Now, what you do to study or to look into surface plasma polariton is that you assume you have a plane wave, right? The p-polar is a plane wave at an angle coming down, and you write the plane wave equation that you have H field, E field, right? And then you write it for both the metal and for the air, okay? So you have E field, H field, and you need the boundary condition or the continuity equation at the interface. And you apply the interface continuity equation at some conditions, when the material property of this metal, if it satisfies some kind of condition, the epsilon 1 is the real part of the dielectric constant, right? If the real part of the dielectric constant is less than 0, but its absolute value is greater than 1, you can find a solution for the for the wave vector for this wave in the metal film. This wave vector k is related to the optical properties or dielectric constants in this way. Okay, so it is expressed as a frequency over speed of light and times this expression, and this is of course we call dispersion equation. Right. So another outcome of this calculation. Actually, this is not a complicated thing to do if you have the 604 or equivalent optics. You can easily do this yourself. The second result is that the k vector in z direction is imaginary, meaning there's no propagating wave along this direction. Imaginary means the decay wave is evanescent wave. So the wave is trapped near the surface region. Okay, so this is why we call it a surface plasma polariton. Okay, so now if you have a perfectly smooth film, metal film, or a metal surface, and you have a light shining on it, you can solve for this equation k, but this equation k versus omega cannot be satisfied by the dispersion equation of light. The dispersion of equation of light, it basically is the k versus omega is the speed of light, which is a straight line. And that straight line and this dispersion equation has no intersection point, meaning if you have a perfectly fine film, you cannot excite a surface plasma polariton, or the wave vector or the momentum conservation cannot be satisfied. Okay, so now what will happen if you have a periodic structure? Periodic structure, if you do optics, you say periodic structure, I have grading. Grading is one periodic structure. And what happened here is very similar to what happened in grading. Okay. So you have periodic structure. Let's say this is a hole. The periodicity is defined by the spacing between the holes. And this periodicity between the holes provides you additional wave vector, which is expressed as 2 pi over the periodicity A. And these multiplied by any integer times plus the wave vector from the light, 2 pi lambda times the sine theta. The theta is the angle of incidence of the light. And this can provide you a wave vector which can satisfy this equation, which can make this equation valid. Now, this is one explanation that say that if I have surface plasma excitation, then this surface plasma will enhance the field. This surface plasma will re-emit radiation so that you have a very large transmission through the whole array. Now, on the other hand, we will say it will be useful, okay, to have a single nano aperture with concentrated light source. Okay. Now, here we have a whole bunch of holes, right? It's good. We have higher transmission, but for some applications, we want a single hole. For example, if you want to do optical data storage, you want to store information on the disk, you only want to write it on a CD, right? So you only need one. For this case, if you put a single hole here, of course, you don't have periodicity anymore. You cannot excite surface plasma anymore, so you cannot produce a higher transmission. So we are still need to look for other solutions to produce a very high transmission light source, right? So for example, data storage, lithography, and detection, so on and so forth, we want a single hole. Okay, so this will come to the topic of my talk, which is the nanoscale optical antenna that we are studying. So in this presentation, that I will try to talk about the theory behind it and the design and experiments for studying the nanoscale optical antenna. So what are the nanoscale optical antenna? The first idea that you can come with is I just shrink the size of antenna that I have seen on the roof, right? So I can shrink all kinds of antenna. This is kind of a strip antenna. You have two bars of metal with a gap in the middle. The length of this maybe has to do with some kind of fraction of the wavelengths, lambda over 2 or n times lambda over 2. Or you can have a bar of these things mimicking this antenna, outdoor television antennas, or these strip antennas, right, two long lines of metal wires. But you need to make this in nanometer dimension. Right? The condition is that you need to make it small, as out of hundreds of nanometer or even less. Right? So what we are looking into, or what I'm going to talk about today, is something different from this type of reduced version of microwave. We'll talk about a type of antenna called ridge antenna. Okay, and the goal of looking into variation of the antenna structure is to optimize the coupling of the light at the nanoscale. Now, what is the ridge aperture antenna? What is that? Okay, so the simplest way to think about it, I have one here. What we have here, let's say this is a piece of metal, and I have cut this metal into an H shape. Okay, so this H shape, the brighter area represents where the metal is taken away, removed. Okay, and these two, we call them ridges. Okay, so this is the top view. You can consider this as the top view, and this is the side view. So the basic idea of this ridge antenna is that I make an antenna with this shape. Maybe the size of this antenna, the dimension, the critical dimension of this hole, is roughly half of the wavelengths. We know half the wavelengths is the minimum wavelengths that you can allow the light to propagate through, right? Waveguides, for all the waveguides and so on and so forth. Half wavelength is the smallest that you can create some kind of resonant condition. But in the middle, you create a narrower region. This narrower region, what the use of this narrower region is that you concentrate the electric field between the two ridges, or within this gap, okay, within this gap. So now, with this relatively simple geometry, right, everything straight, you just cut two straight ridges, and you can find an analytical way to solve for the resonant condition, the resonant wavelength that allow the light to pass through. If the wavelength is greater than this resonant wavelength, the light won't go through. So the resonant wavelength is also the cutoff wavelength for the light to go through. So you calculate its resonant wavelength. Again, you can find the analytical solution. You can calculate it. It's expressed in this term. And I have one example here. Let's say if you have the dimension A, the width of the whole geometry is 300 nanometers, B is 200, S, the gap, this size is 100, and the gap size is 100. And you can find out the cutoff wavelength is about 800 nanometers and compared to the 300 nanometer total dimension. So you can push a little longer wavelength through this kind of structure. Okay. Now, the shape of H is not the only shape that you can come up with if you're looking to this type of aperture. You can cut this in half, of course. If you cut in half and if you leave versus you leave everything here, there's no difference because they are basically mirror imaging to each other in optics, right? You can cut it in half and this should still work. If you change these straight lines to a little taper, look like a bow tie, and this also works, and this is called bow tie antenna. Okay, so there are many variations that you can come up with. Now, the other explanation for why the light can propagate through this aperture, you can think about this as the from the consideration of dipoles. Right? If you have a dipole, let's say you excite this metal film, your polarization direction is here, you create an E field, and the current induce a current that is going around this, and in the, of course, opposite sides, right? So you generate this current flow, of course, it flow from here and terminate here. Because of the oscillation of the electric field, of course, this thing just oscillating back and forth. And of course, this oscillating current generates a magnetic field or magnetic dipole. So you can approximate the whole thing as one electric dipole, which is here, P, or two magnetic dipole. And you can calculate the far field, near field radiation based on these dipole models. Okay, so here is what we have calculated. So you have this is the electric field, this is a magnetic field, and this is, again, using H as one example. If we look at the detailed structures of this wave propagation through these antennas, apertures, okay? So again, we use this H shape. Here on the top row, we are plotting the electric field in this cross section, okay? You cut it in this way, and you plot it, okay? The difference between among these four plots are the incident wavelengths. The incident wavelengths changes from 150 nanometer to 1,000 nanometers, okay? And the material itself, here we consider so-called ideal conductor. Ideal conductor is the property that you use for microwave. So basically, we only scale down the size. We haven't considered the property changes from microwave to optical wave yet. Okay, so now your incident wave is always polarized in this direction. Okay, the E direction. Okay, and if you look at the cross section, and this one 1,000 nanometer is larger than the cutoff wavelength, which is 800 something that I talked. The light does not go through. If you have 500 nanometer, there's a propagating mode that is going through this gap, right? And 250, of course, there's also a propagating mode. And when you reduce this wavelength to 150 nanometer, if I cut across this section, okay, just plot here, you cut across here, and you plot the cross-section electric field distribution, you will see that instead of one spot coming out, you have now two spots. Okay, and if you analyze the mode of this wave, it's actually the TE20 mode. Okay, the TE20 mode. You have two spots coming out, which is more easily see from here. You have 500 nanometer, you get a nice bright spot in the middle. And you have 150 as an incoming wavelength, you generate two spots. Okay. Two spots sometimes is not good as one spot. We want to produce a light spot as small as possible. So this means that if you have a choice of wavelengths, it doesn't mean that the smaller the better. Sometimes you have to pick the right wavelengths for as your light source. Okay. So this is basically an optical phenomenon, and you can look into a lot of resonant type of phenomena, right? So one of the things we can look into is the similar to Fabry-Perot like resonance, just like you have dielectric slab, things like that, you have resonance across the thickness. Here, if the thickness of the film satisfies the half of the integer times the group wavelengths, not the incoming wavelengths, but the group wavelengths of this light in the material, then you can see there's oscillation behavior, meaning that the transmission power changes with the thickness, right? So you can choose the thickness to maximize your transmission, right? So this is also what this means. Okay. Now let's just look at a comparison between a ridge aperture versus regular aperture. Okay. So this is, again, this is like an age, and you can also produce an aperture that this big, which has outside dimension of this H, or you can produce, you can calculate what is the transmission property of the size of the gap. And this shows pretty clearly that if you have this ridge shape, your field is localized, and this one, the field is spread all over the place, and this one, because this is too small, so the transmission is very weak. And here is another comparison. So if you have the aperture size decreases, let's say from this dimension, 200 some nanometer, all the way to 50 nanometer, and the transmission will decrease if the shape is a regular one. But if you have a ridge shape, the transmission stays almost a constant. I use the dot, but actually it stays almost a constant on the order of one. Okay. So far what I have talked was that we use so-called ideal conductor property to calculate all these things. Ideal conductor means that we basically use the optical properties in the microwave region, and we don't consider any effects such as surface plasma. So now if we consider this problem in the optical frequency, which is indeed what we need, is then of course we have to consider the optical properties, and we can implement all kinds of models in the calculation, right? So here, let's say this is the ideal conductor. So you can calculate this shape, and you can calculate the spot size as we did previously. And if you change to aluminum property, aluminum, at this wavelength 488, it looks fairly similar, because alumina is not known as a plasmodic material because of its optical property at that wavelength. But the silver, of course, if you are working in the area of plasmonics, you know that silver or noble metal in general are known to generate surface plasmons, right? So if you look at the silver, you have the electric field spread out all over the place because you are exciting the surface plasmons. And this surface plasma is going away from this aperture in this way, so you have the bright field all over the place. So in this case, the surface plasma is not good for producing a very small light spot. Okay, it's not so good. All right. So how do we know that's surface plasma? So the surface plasma, essentially, is a phenomenon called temporal resonance. Okay, what is temporal resonance? Temporal resonance is like you push a child on a swing, right? You push it, and if you're pushing frequency the same as the natural frequency of the swing, you push it higher and higher, right? Push the child and push the swing higher and higher. So it takes time to accumulate that height, or it takes time to accumulate the resonance of surface plasma. So here the calculation, if you have aluminum, which we said is there's no surface plasma generated, and you fire a pulse on this structure, the oscillation of the electric field instantaneously reaches the highest. Reaches the highest. Whereas if you have a silver, which we want to look into its plasma property, you see it takes some period of oscillation to reach the highest amplitude, right? So this is an indirect proof for the temporal resonance condition that is established in this silver film. Okay, so now if the surface plasma is bad, meaning that it spread out the radiation, but on the other hand, if you work with surface plasma, you know that surface plasma produce a very high intense light, right? Highly, high intensity light. So if we can utilize the surface plasma, of course, we can produce a light which has a higher intensity, which is good. So now, if we can come up with some design like here, if we can localize the surface plasma to the location that we want, okay, and that surface plasma can work into our purpose. So here's some samples. So let's say we take a silver. If we look at the okay here, if you do not optimize the condition, if you do not deliberately produce a localized surface plasma, you can end up with excitation, highest peak of excitation at the corner of this bow tie shape. Okay, so of course we show this example just to show you that you can even spread this surface plasma all the way to the edge, to the corner. On the other hand, if you say you change the wavelength by not that much, and you can cause the resonance and to localize the plasma to the middle region. Okay. All right. So if you look at these numbers, the peak intensity here is 212, meaning that the intensity at the gap at the center is more than 200 times higher than the incoming radiation. Okay, which is obviously very, very good. Now, if you have a different material, let's say chromium or aluminum, doesn't matter, which does not generate such surface plasma, and you, whatever you do, you can, of course, you do not have this spreading of the wave, but you cannot produce a very, very high intensity light spot. In this case, it's 9 times higher than the incoming, but it's far less than 200 times. So, but however, as we see here, if we want to work with surface plasma, and you have to be very careful in terms of choosing your wavelengths or the dimension, because we really don't change the wavelengths that much. The performance of this antenna structure is very, very sensitive to the wavelengths, to the dimensions, and also to the material properties and so on, contamination, thin film quality, and so on and so forth. Okay. So now the challenges of implementing this thing, implementing the design of antenna. The first is material consideration. You have to choose the right material, aluminum, chromium, and the silver that we talked before. What are the other choices? In real manufacturing or real fabrication of this antenna, you also have to consider the thin film material itself, how well you can coat a film. For those of you who have worked in the clean room or making these metal films, you know, some metal give you very large grain size, some give you very small grain size, some are smoother, some are worse, and so on and so forth, right? So you're also limited by the manufacturability, what kind of film you can make into very good quality, and also how fine the resolution you can get. In making such aperture, we are talking about 100 nanometer, 50 nanometer of that order. So is the facility that you have allow you to make such a fine structure. The last thing, of course, is the geometry. You can vary the geometry as much as you want. There are all kinds of geometry you can choose. So what exactly you can do, how you can optimize the geometry to produce an ideal structure. And these are all the legitimate questions. Right? So I think I will probably go very quickly through this design strategy. Basically, what one design strategy that that one can use is to do a so-called spectral analysis. The spectral analysis is that you look at the spectral performance of this antenna, meaning that you shoot this antenna with a very short pulse. Let's say short means of the order of femtoseconds. If you have such a short pulse, any short pulse inherently will carry a large wavelength band. If you work with femtosecond later, you will know. There's a bandwidth for any femtosecond later. The shorter the pulse, the wider the band. So if you fire a short pulse, you can calculate the wavelength response or the frequency response of the antenna quickly, more quickly. Okay, this all the ideas to how to search for the best dimensions, wavelengths, and so on and so forth. If you can do many calculations simultaneously, of course, this is good. So you do a short pulse incidence, analyze its spectral response, and calculate the field. Then you go back and forth and going through this loop. And in that way, you can design this structure in a very quick way. Okay. So now, once you make this structure, you have to characterize it, you have to measure it, you have to demonstrate that there's a small light spot in the nanometer size with high concentration and so on and so forth. So what you need to do this experiment is the so-called near-field scanning optical microscope, right, or ENSAM. So the idea of ENSAM is here. I guess most of you were familiar with AFM, atomic force microscope. So in AFM, you have a cantilever. You have a cantilever which has a very sharp tip. You have a light shining on the top, reflected, going to a position-sensitive detector. So this detector helps you to maintain the distance between the tip and the surface. Then you scan this tip, and then you can obtain the surface topography of the sample. So here, in the ENSAM, what you can do is you can modify this probe such that at the tip you have a small opening. Okay, the small opening allows the light to go through, and also it can allow you to maintain a certain contact or non-contact mode between the tip and the sample. Okay, so here is the tip, right? So it's like a typical AFM probe. You have a hole at the center, and you scan it, you get an optical image. Okay, so there are many types of probe that you can do, and this is one of my former students fabricated all kinds of probes, right? So you can have different size geometry, but also you can play with the shape of this probe, and you can put a center spot, which you can consider this probe as itself as antenna structure. So we can also fabricate an antenna structure on top, on the tip of the probe. So, and I'll talk about this later. So let's say these probes. So to map the intensity of the, let's say, bow tie or H shape aperture, we make these apertures in the sample, and also we make some other shapes there. So you can compare, right? So you can compare the performance of this H or bow tie, whatever, versus a regular shape, a square, a big, large square, or a circle, or whatever. Then what you do is you illuminate the entire structure simultaneously. So the intensity on this is the same. Then you collect the light transmitting through these holes, apertures. Then you can see what kind of resolution you can get, what kind of spot size you can produce using from these kind of apertures. So you see that you can see these numbers that the bow tie aperture give the smallest spot size. Okay, if we plot the three-dimensional shape, there's an array of H, right? So you can see that you can produce small light spots. Okay. So now, in addition to that, we can also look into the surface plasma. Actually, we can also measure the surface plasma using this ENSAM system. So to measure surface plasma, you do a comparative study again. You make identical structures in gold, which noble metal is known to generate surface plasma, versus chrome or aluminum, which is known not to generate or provide you any surface plasma. So if you do this, again, you shoot the light here and you collect the transmitted field, for gold, you will see the transmitted light from the bow tie, and also there are some light appear on the shoulder of this light spot. So you can detect there are some surface plasma wave that is near the side of the center spot. And if you look at the chrome, the spot is very clean. You only have one spot, there's nothing else. Okay. And you can also look into the resonance. The one way, one very special feature that we really want to understand is the resonance. The resonance create a peak, right? So if you have a structure like this, and if you try to measure the wavelength dependence of the transmission, you can better understand how these apertures behave. So if we look at this again, we have for comparison purpose, we have some other shapes here, and only the bow tie provides you a resonant peak at a certain wavelength, and this also agrees with what we can calculate. The calculations say the bow tie will have a peak, the others, of course, almost flat lines. Okay. So I think I probably have 5 minutes or so. I want to talk very, very quickly about the applications. So now we can make these things. What's the use of that, right? So the possible applications. If you have a very small light spot, the possible application is essentially numerous, right? You can imagine. You can use it for this and that. So optical imaging, optical trapping, optical data storage, and goes on and on. So let me just talk about the first two, optical imaging. We go back to this Anson system. You can put an antenna structure on the tip at the tip of this optical probe and use it to replace these normal probes, right? And you can measure the light. You can use it as a probe to study whatever you want to study. Okay. Now, I don't have time to go to the details of these images. The thing is that I want to show here that the using the bow tie, you can get a brighter light spot. You can get a high throughput of imaging process. Remember that if we have this kind of probe, the probe itself has a very small hole. The light does not want to go through, right? So the transmission is very, very poor. If we have a structure like this, we want to enhance the transmission. So if you enhance transmission, you can increase the speed of imaging. So this is showing the counts, the photon counts. And when you reduce the dimension, the size of the antenna, the count will decrease, and it will remain a relative constant. The decrease because above this wavelength, actually, your size is bigger than, the whole size is bigger than lambda over 2. You allow the light propagate through it anyway, right? So this is scale with the area. When you reduce to below a certain size, you still have you can still maintain a certain count. So the other thing is we want to use it to do lithography. Okay, lithography. I guess most of you are familiar with that. The first step to produce any structure. What we are trying to do is a kind of contact lithography. Use a bow tie or antenna here, then shoot the light through the antenna and onto the photoresist. Okay, so this thing shows the comparative study. Right? You shoot the light through all these things simultaneously, and your in lithography you can also control the exposure time. Exposure time is what you can control. So you see here the bow tie produce a light spot that as small as this size, and this slot produce a light spot roughly the same size because it's just basically determined by the length of the slot. Right? The others, there's no light going through, or there's no sufficient light to go through to produce anything on the photoresist. Okay, so you can produce a spot with a size of, let's say, in this case, 50 nanometers. Okay, so in the summary, we say that this optical antenna, if you search optical antenna in literature, this is an exploding field. A lot of people are getting interest in that because it's wide use in many things. Okay, but on the other hand, there's always a lot left to be done. We only scratch the surface, and this is a relatively new area like other nano areas, nano electronics, or things like that. So with that, this is my last slide. And if you have any questions, that I'll be glad to answer that.
All right. When you're doing your writing, are you using FIB milling or is that EB electron beam lithography?
So the question is the fabrication is E beam or FIB. We use FIB here. Okay, there are other people using E beam, and we also tried E beam before. The FIB is easier in a sense, but it also has some problem. Potentially, it has problem because you have ions shooting on a metal, and the metal is coated on, in our case, coated on quartz. Okay, you may deposit some ions into the quartz that can change this property. That thing is something we don't know yet. Okay, on the other hand, for E-beam, you can make a lot of things simultaneously. Right? E-beam, you do a mask type of approach. Potentially, you can do a lot of things simultaneously, but on the other hand, you have many, many steps, contaminations, anything can go wrong. And also, if we look at those apertures that we make, and I don't think the E-beam can make that fine, that nice structure yet. I haven't seen anybody else can make a structure as good as that. Okay, maybe we with our new tool, we can make something as nice as that. All right.